Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
What I'm starting with is a blockbuster deal this morning. Adam Schefter reported the Bills are sending Stephon Diggs to Houston for draft pick compensation. Once again, Stephon Diggs on his way to Houston, who has had an amazing offseason. And in Buffalo, they continue to knock this thing down. Come to find out, maybe all was not perfect between Diggs and Josh Allen, between Diggs and the Buffalo Bills. That'll happen. It happened in Minnesota. Hell of a player. He does run pretty hot. So this thing probably just did run its course. As much of a blockbuster as it is, it's really not that shocking, right? He was through with them. They were through with him. It was time to move on for both sides. In other words, consider that a divorce.
Consider that a divorce.
Oh, James Kelly found it. I told James Kelly before the show, I'm going to need consider that a divorce.
Consider that
a divorce. He's like, dude, I can't find it. I don't understand Alvin's system. He's got everything secretly coded. I'm like, how can you not find that one? He's like, I don't know. I can't find it. Hashtag total recall. Anyway, consider that a divorce, Mafia, between Diggs and Buffalo and Buffalo and Diggs. And not shocking, again. Now, having said that, I absolutely love it for Houston. No, maybe Diggs is not the threat or the player that he once was. But he is still effective, and he still has juice. And at 30, he is still a legitimate WR1. A legitimate WR1 on a team that already has options at that position. And you know he's going to come in with something to prove. Again, he does run hot. And I've got no idea why he can no longer make it work with Josh Allen. I mean, the guy was playing with Josh Allen, right? Any receiver would cut off their arm to play with Josh Allen. In the end, it didn't work, or it no longer worked, because it did work for a while. I got a question. Who the hell is Josh Allen going to throw the ball to now? Himself? One more question. Why does he think that south of Knicks is better than Javier's? It's not. And he can't throw it to himself. But I know this. The Texans, to me, were already a legitimate Lombardi contender before that deal got done. This just makes them that much better. And my man Nick Caserio is a genius. He is building a monster. He has cash. He's using it smartly. And as a team and a fan base, that's exactly what you want. Because Nick took some big freaking swings this offseason. That's what going all in looks like, Jarrah. Nick Caserio went all in, and not just because he made that deal for Diggs. He's been busy all offseason. That was just the biggest deal. He also absolutely loaded up on the defensive side of the ball, too. I'm here to tell you, the Texans were already legitimate Lombardi contenders, and that was before Nick pulled the trigger on this Diggs deal. Again, I'm not really sure why Stephon Diggs was over Buffalo or didn't want to play with them anymore or was over Josh Allen or both. But it's pretty clear to me that he does want to play with C.J. Stroud. They don't make that deal if he doesn't want to play with C.J. Stroud. And I know it's not a long-term play. It's not a long-term play, but it doesn't matter. What it is, obviously, is trying to surround C.J. with as much talent as they possibly can while he plays out that rookie deal and while that championship window is wide ass open. Because for the Texans, that championship window is now wide ass open. They are a legitimate title contender right now. And Nick Caserio is a boss. I don't see how they could have possibly have had a better offseason than they've had. And Buffalo, given the offseason you've had, and I know plenty of you will run up in here and say good riddance to Diggs, but you can't tell me that all the moves that you've made and all the casualties of the cap have made you a better team, that you're better for all of that. You're not, obviously. This is not addition by subtraction. Again, who is Allen going to throw it to? Who is his go-to guy now? Houston just got that much better. The Bills got that much worse. And the Texans championship window is open wider while the Bills is closing shut. I love that deal for the Texans. And I'm not shocked that Buffalo's moving on, and so is Diggs. So on both sides of that, Texans fans, reaction. Hey, Mafia, it's been a minute. I want to know how you feel about this. I know that you saw this coming. I know this can't come as a shock to you. But I am curious, what are your thoughts about the front office shipping your WR1 to Houston? In fact, let me rephrase that in case you missed this point already. I'm curious how you feel about legendary clone Nick Caserio ripping your WR1 for a second-round pick. I'm going to go out on a limb right now and say that CJ Stroud right now is definitely hyped. CJ is having a great day. But Mafia, how about you? How you living? I know Stroud's having a great day. How's your day? How you feeling about things? And you know me, I love Buffalo too. These are both enormous jungle teams. I'm not here to crack on the Mafia. I love the Mafia. But I love the Texans. I'm just curious, Mafia. Now what? Buffalo has no clear replacement lined up. Who is Josh Allen going to throw to? Not Gabe Davis. He's gone. He's in Jacksonville, kicking it with the Queen and her tenderonis. So, there is no clear-cut one, or even a clear-cut two, in Buffalo right now. Which has me a little bit confused. And yes, I understand. The draft is loaded at wide receiver. No doubt about that. But there is no guarantee that any of the guys Buffalo will target as their top receiver is going to be around when they pick. Or that they can get that with that newly acquired second-round pick at number 42 overall. Even if Buffalo is able to somehow draft a receiver they absolutely love without moving up, or even if they do, it's still asking a hell of a lot of a rookie because that rookie's going to have to walk right in the door and produce from day one. And we know that's not the easiest thing to do, right? Telephone number is toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. Mafia, what's up? Are you going to come in here and do what I expect and tell me that Diggs was actually a big part of the problem, that you're actually better off without him than you were with him? Good riddance? Yeah, I don't know about that. In fact, I do know about that. You're not better off without him. You're not better today than you were yesterday. But I'll tell you who is. Freaking Texans. Nick Caserio, doing what he does, having a huge offseason. Call the program right now. Texans fans, look at what Nick has done. Look at what that roster looks like. And it's not just Diggs. Danielle Hunter, et al., defensively. They're a straight-up Lombardi contender right this second. Mafia, what do you make of your offseason? But as we start hour number two, we are joined right now by the head football coach at UAB. He's going into his second season as the Blazers head coach. He was the sixth overall pick by Tampa Bay in the 1994 draft out of Fresno State. He played 14 years in the NFL. He won a Super Bowl with the Ravens in 1997. He was a Pro Bowler that year as well. If you're looking ahead, UAB is going to host Alcorn State on August 29th. We are joined now by Trent Dilfer. Trent, what's going on? Great to have you back. How are you?
Jim, always great to hang with you in the jungle.
You too, man. Great to have you back. All right, so when you and I last spoke, Trent, in August, you were getting ready for your first game as UAB's head coach. So much has happened between then and now. It take a moment. As you look back on your first season, what kind of thoughts do you have? What stands out to you the most?
Oh, wow.
Right?
Yeah, I learned a lot. I knew I would. You know, I didn't go into it thinking I had all the answers. So, you know, I went into it knowing I'd learn a lot, observed a lot of, well, I'd say self-reflected a lot and observed a lot of my building and the interactions in college football in general. I think the big takeaway is, you know, these are kids. The narrative around them, because of NIL and the popularity of college football, is they're like semi-pro players, but they're not. You know, they're kids, and they need that fatherly figure in their life. They need to appreciate their college education, their college experience. They need to be part of something bigger than themselves. They need to learn habits that will help them become great husbands and fathers and professionals. And you can't lose sight of that. I think at times there's so much pressure to win, and every week is so competitive. You can kind of get lost in the X's and O's, so to speak, and you can't forget about the X's and O's of their hearts. And I think that's the one thing going into this offseason I was very intentional about was, yeah, we got to get better in every area. We're a 4-8 program. I'm a 4-8 coach. But we can be a 12-0 college football playoff program in terms of dealing with kids and making sure that they're better because they're UAB football players. And really the proof is in asking them. I think the thing I've been really pleased with this offseason is if you talk to them, they would say that. They would say that their coaches love for them, care for them, coach them hard, hold them accountable. But this is a very tight-knit group in a very short amount of time.
We are talking to Trent Dilfer. It's such an interesting response, Trent. Like, for instance, do they know that they need all that? Do they want all of that? Or do they just want what they can get?
I very much disagree with the narrative they're only in it for the money. I think deep down they want exactly what we're giving to them. And they've expressed that to us. Yes, I think they do deserve money. I've always believed that college athletes should be compensated for the money, for the revenue they bring in to the athletic departments of their institutions. But that can't be the primary motivation. You know, they need to feel like they're cared for. They need to have security in that. They need to feel like they're getting better on and off the football field. That's been the biggest feedback I've gotten from my 120, as well as the coaches, about 150 people plus in the building, that we're delivering what they deep down really want. They want to be part of something bigger themselves. They want to grow as humans. They want to grow as players, as coaches. And you got to provide an environment where growth is possible every single day. And the other stuff too. Listen, I don't minimize the X's and O's. I don't minimize the winning. I don't minimize the competitive temperament. I don't minimize the toughness. I don't minimize any of that. It's a both and. And unfortunately, my experience in football is either or. And we really want to have a both and approach here.
UAB head coach Trent Dilfer joining us. You know, Trent, I'm really amazed and fascinated by your journey. You and I have talked about this at great length. So I'm really curious, like, you talk about the players and what they want, what they need. Like any great leader, I know you, and you actually started to talk about this for a moment. You're going to self-scout. You're going to self-audit. You're going to analyze not only your team's performance, but your own. So what did you learn about yourself last year, and where are you looking to improve in your second season?
Number one, kind of emotional stability. I've always been a really fiery guy. And in a lot of platforms I've been in, it's probably been the right approach. This one I have to take a much more poised approach to. I think with my coaches especially, I coach my coaches really hard, but that doesn't mean you have to yell and scream at them. It doesn't mean that you have to ever degrade them. I made a terrible mistake in a game that was well publicized last year against Tulane where I just absolutely reamed a coach on the sideline. For a mistake that was may have cost us the game, but he as a human being didn't deserve that. And our team kind of retreated, after that. So you have a lot of impact in the seat and you want to make sure you handle, that impact properly for growth and not to tear people down. So, that's one I've learned. I got to find a balance. I've found it this offseason so far of being the CEO, but also leaning into the things that I know a whole lot about. I've been part of two of the greatest defenses in NFL history, Tampa and Baltimore. I've grown up a defensive guy, obviously know a lot about football, spent a lifetime in the quarterback world. I need to lean into those more, but I can't ever sacrifice the CEO duties, which is a big job right now in college football. You're handling a lot more than they did 5, 6, 7 years ago. So that balance and then just the teaching coaches how to teach. You know, I grew up really fortunately the son of an offensive line coach. He was a great teacher. He was a great coach. My mom was a great teacher. I learned how to teach at a very young age. And a lot of coaches are so caught up in recruiting and X's and O's, they've forgotten the secret sauce of coaching, which is actually teaching. Now, fortunately, I have coaches that, want to learn how to teach better. So we talk a lot about how to reach young people, how to share a message, how to clearly communicate, how to reinforce it, how to quiz it, how to test it, but make sure these guys are taking all this information we're giving them and actually processing it the correct way, and it's having effective change on them, and that's what teachers are able to do. I celebrate teachers all over the country because I really think that the good ones connect in a unique way and create life change.
Right. Trent Topher joining us. Some of the best coaches are the best teachers, of course. You know, Trent, interesting that you said that you've always been that fiery guy. True. You've always been a fiery guy, but one of the lessons you learned this past year is, you know, maybe I've got to take a step back, maybe temper that emotion slightly, maybe show a little more composure in certain moments. Having said all of that, the motto for the program is fire breathers only. Has that changed at all?
No, I think you can breathe fire without losing your mind. You know, that came from, it's a military thing. A buddy of mine who was in the military, special ops, told me, like, that's how the elite of the elite respect each other, by using that moniker. You know, if you're truly a fire breather, you're somebody you can, he's trustable. He's a guy I put my life on the line for. He's somebody that I can, you know, go to battle with. And it's not just losing your mind and jumping up and down and dancing on the sideline or yelling and screaming. That's not the intent of it. It's somebody that just their natural energy and their presence brings life to the group. If you do that and you're a guy that's trustable, you're a guy that, trustable is a word I made up, by the way. It's trustworthy and accountable. It's a term we use around here a lot. But if you're that kind of guy, you're our kind of guy, then you're a fire breather.
Hey, Trent, my listeners make up words all day long, every single day. Don't sweat that. You know, so you know what's kind of funny is you talk about your defensive roots, but the fact of the matter is you know the quarterback position as well as anybody as well. Last season, Baylor transfer Jacob Zeno set the UAB single-season record for completions. He threw for the second most yards ever in a season, over 3,100. So how far did Jacob come last year, and then how much better do you think he can still get?
That's a great question. He came light years, and everybody wants to give me the credit because I'm a quarterback guy, and I deflected. I mean, Alex Mortensen, our offense coordinator, is one of the young rock stars in college football. Nick Coleman, our quarterback coach. We have about four other staff members that have been quarterback coaches or coordinators before that know the quarterback position very well, and they've really had a lot to do with this. And then Jacob himself. I mean, that's the thing, is he stayed here. He turned down $400,000 from other places to play here for peanuts. He knows that we're giving him the best information. He wants to be an NFL quarterback, and he knows he's in a place as good as any in the country to develop as an NFL quarterback. So he's grasped onto it, and he's been able to take hard coaching. I told him early on, I said, you know, be careful what you ask for because you just got it. And what I meant by that was when I am the head of developing the quarterback and hire people that are quarterback-centric to develop him, that sounds really good on paper. The day-to-day of that is relentless, brutal, monotonous, and really hard because we have expectations. I guarantee we coach Jacob Zeno as hard as any NFL coaches, NFL quarterbacks being coached. I guarantee it. I guarantee our expectation level for him in film study and XO with footwork, with technique, with reading defenses, with checking protections, with handling the run game, with leadership, how he is as high as anybody in the world right now. And we told him that. We said it you're going to hate it at times, but then on Saturdays you'll understand why we do it. And he's really, you know, he's grasped onto that concept and that teaching methodology, and he's come a long way. Now, how much better he can get? Light years. And I was the first to tell him. I called him in our end-of-season evaluation, and I just said, hey, man, congratulations. You had a really good year, 19th in the country in offense, you know, was second in the country in completions. Your completion percentage was top five, blah, 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 blah. I said, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd give you a 5. Hmm. I said, so let's climb to a 9 or a 10 this year, and let's go to work right away. And this was during portal time. This is why he's being recruited by other teams, offering him 10x what we could offer him. And I just wanted to be honest with him. I sat him down and I said, listen, if you want the money and you want to go and be coached well but not the best, I will help you get there. If you want to have less money and be coached harder than you can ever imagine but chase your potential and play in the NFL one day, then stay here. And he didn't even entertain the other options. He said, I want to continue to be coached this way. I want you to coach me like a pro. And, I just left the field. he had another really good day, and the first five things that came out of my mouth were things that I thought he could have done better and things he needs to work on if he wants to play at the highest level.
My man, that's brass. Telling him you'd give him a grade of five right around that time he could hit the portal. Hey, Trent, one last thought. You laid out a really interesting scenario on my dude Greg McElroy's local radio program in Birmingham recently. You said that based on things that you've heard, that within 18 months, a super league will be formed, which would separate the major conferences from the rest of college sports, and that new entity might look a lot like a pro league. Was that kind of was that in effect what you were getting at? Is that inevitable? Do you like that idea?
I absolutely think it's inevitable. And by the way, I don't know squat. I'm a mid-major head football coach, so don't take Trent Dilfer's word for it. I just happen to know a lot of really powerful people.
Right?
You know, I was in the Bay Area for all those years.
Doesn't seem that far-fetched, right?
Yeah, and I just know what the conversations are that are going behind the scenes by some of those powerful people in our country and some of the richest. And they really see it. They need, everybody wants and needs another NFL. Well, the only way that happens is if the best teams play the best teams every week. And that's why I think it's inevitable. That with revenue sharing, with players organizing, collective bargaining possibly being down the road, like, this ends with a branch of college football that's elevated and that's separated out, and that they play each other on a week-to-week basis. And the majority of the TV money going into that and other networks sharing, you know, now you have NBC and ESPN and Fox and all of them, ABC, trying to carve out a space within that Super League just like they do for TV rights in the NFL. I mean, it's, if you just do the math, that's where it's going.
Follow the money. He is the head football coach at UAB. He's getting ready for his second season. He was the sixth overall pick by the Bucks back in 1994. He is Trent Dilfer, fire breather. Trent, really appreciate you. Always appreciate the conversation. Great getting caught up, Trent. Thanks so much.
You're the best, Jim. Thanks for having me.
You too, brother. Trent Dilfer. So I've got a quick question for you. Are you looking for ultimate comfort and pain relief? Let's compare G-Defy shoes to other shoe brands that promise comfort and support and pain relief. Typical shoe brands rely on EVA soles for cushioning, but G-Defy offers so much more. G-Defy goes above and beyond with VersoShock technology, providing superior shock absorption and energy return if you suffer from foot, knee, or back pain. G-Defy's advanced technology may help provide you with the relief you deserve. I can't even believe these shoes and the difference they make for me. G-Defy shoes also offer two free supportive orthotics to help improve your body's biomechanics, resulting in proper body alignment and ultimate comfort. Yes, they do all that. So whether you're an athlete, a busy parent, or just somebody who's always on the go, G-Defy shoes offers the versatility and the comfort that your feet crave and need. Say goodbye to discomfort. G-Defy is more than EVA soles. It could be your path to unparalleled comfort and pain relief. Visit G-Defy.com today. Experience ultimate comfort and pain relief at G-Defy.com. G-D-E-F-Y.com. Use the code JIM30 for $30 off orders of $150 or more. That's code JIM30 for $30 off orders of $150 or more. G-Defy shoes. They are incredible. We are joined right now by the head coach of the Michigan Panthers of the United Football League. The Panthers beat the St. Louis Battlehawks 18-16 in their season opener Saturday. He had previously served as the head coach of the 49ers for four seasons from 2005 through 2008. Also a D coordinator for eight different NFL teams, most recently with the Cowboys in 2020. The Panthers host the Birmingham Stallions on Sunday. We are joined right now by Mike Nolan. Mike, it is great to have you on the show. How you doing, Mike?
Well, thank you very much. Nice to be on the show. I appreciate it. Never been on before, Jim. This first time. So thank you.
Mike, it's great to have you on. We should have done this sooner, but it's great to have you on right now. And there is a first for everything. Hey, listen, I want to ask you about your team, and I want to ask you about that big win in the season opener, Mike. But I am curious how you initially wound up coaching that team. Given all that you've achieved in the NFL, what was it about this venture and this opportunity that appealed to you?
You know, in 2020, after that season, the COVID year, which wasn't a good year for a lot of people, and in particular myself. But anyhow, when that year was over, I kind of retired, and I thought I was out for 2 years. And then Jeff Fisher was the head coach of this team that I'm currently with, the Michigan Panthers, and he was the coach. And then he had to get out for some personal reasons. So anyhow, I got a phone call, asked if I was interested, and I was interested. And one thing led to another, and I got the team. But I would say the biggest reason I came back, and this is the whole truth, is I really felt it was a great opportunity for me to give back. I had coached in the NFL for a very long time, for 34 years, and in coaching totally 40 years. And I was retired, like I said, for a little bit. And I just had always kind of hoped that one day I'd be able to give back. And this is really my opportunity to do that. The players are great, and I really enjoy it. I've never had as much fun as I'm having now. And last year was the same thing. It's just been a real pleasure to coach these guys. So I'm enjoying it. I think it's been a great decision for myself as well as my family, and hopefully continue to go.
Mike Nolan joining us. Mike, that's so interesting. Like you just said, I've never enjoyed myself more than I have right now. As I mentioned, you were a head coach in the NFL. Your father, of course, was a head coach in the NFL. Why are you having more fun now than you've ever had before coaching?
You know, look, I've always coached. I've always enjoyed my players. In the NFL, I did as well. The nice thing about this league is, look, there's no real competition for money. Everybody makes the same amount. Even the coaches' pool is about the same. So it's not about the money. It's really about these guys getting another opportunity to play. And so it's very refreshing because they'll do, you know, these guys are here. They do everything you ask. Everybody's on time. You don't have to police people very often. If you do, you just turn them loose because, you know, why are you even here if you're not trying to go to the next level and do the right thing? And that's why it's so refreshing. And that goes for the coaches, the people within the organization, from Rock and Danny Garcia all the way down, all the people that are controlling the things at the highest level, for example, are just good people. They're around a lot. You get to see them, talk to them. They interact with the players. It's just what comes to mind is kind of a family atmosphere, and to some degree it is. Maybe not totally, but to some degree you just feel like there's a closeness with everyone that's playing. Heck, right here we're sharing a building with the San Antonio team, and so we see them all the time. Wade and I go back. We coach together. So you continually just see people on other teams, and it's really just kind of – it's a neat thing. You know, you play them on Sunday or Saturday, and the other part of the week you're just kind of, you know, having conversations with them.
Chopping it up, Mike Nolan joining us. You know, Mike, I saw a number of years back, I worked for a company, and Jim Morris Sr. worked for the same company, and I saw him at a Christmas party, and I want to say that at that time, he was probably the same age that you are right now, I think, unless I'm off base, and he was still fired up, man. He had that same energy you have right now, and I said, what's it like, Coach, what's it like? He's like, let me tell you something, man. I get up every single morning, and I compete at everything all day long. That hasn't changed. I'm curious, the 2 years that you were, quote, retired, what was that time like for you? Did you enjoy that?
I did enjoy it, but I was a full-time grandpa. We've got 9 grandkids. I've got a 10th on the way, and 6 of them were within 15 minutes of the house, and so that's what I was doing, and I was loving it. Believe me, when the day comes, I'm going to love doing that all the time, and right now I actually get to do that 8 months out of the year, and the other 4 months, obviously, I'm doing this job. So that's what I was doing, and I love being a grandpa, by the way. There's nothing better, but this is a nice break, and like I said, it gives me an opportunity to give back, which I really appreciate.
All right, so Mike, I mentioned the win, but I didn't mention how you won that opener. It was a 2-point win Saturday. I didn't mention you won it on a 64-yard field goal in the final seconds. A kick of that distance alone is going to make news, but the player who made that kick made it even more significant. Jake Bates had not made a field goal since high school in that situation. For those who didn't see it, why did you turn to him in that situation?
Well, I tell you what, you know, it's the, as Rock has said, who runs our league, it's a land of opportunity, or it's a league of opportunity. And we were in the offseason, we were looking hard for somebody with a strong leg. And in our league, because we kick off from the 20-yard line, a strong leg is really a premium. And I felt that our kicker last year was a very good field goal kicker and an adequate kickoff guy, but we needed more. So we were out looking, and it just so happened that Jake was the guy that we came upon as far as having a really strong leg. We decided to give an opportunity. We put him on the team and had the competition between him and the other kicker, and he kicked extremely well. His field goals, you know, he's making all his field goals, and he does in practice. He practiced very well. So as it went along. Obviously, we made the decision he'd be our kicker because of that, and he did a great, as you already stated, he kicked a 64-yarder the other day, which could very easily have gone 70, it looked like to me. And I'll say this, it wasn't like a first time. He kicks those in practice as well. And I don't know if you noticed, but he had to. They called a timeout when
yes.
he kicked his first one. Yeah, and it went right through, and it was like, oh my goodness, I hope he didn't waste his only chance. But then he put it right through again. But he does that in practice. It wasn't a surprise. Matter of fact, before the drive began, I went out to the office, just said, look, guys, we just have to get it to the 45, and we'll be ready to kick. And EJ Perry, our quarterback, looked at me and said, you mean 35, right, Coach? Because that's typically what it is. I said, no, with Jake, I said, it's 45. Let's get it. And he thought, okay. And sure enough, we got it to about the 43, and Jake kicked it twice, and obviously the rest is history, but it was a heck of a kick.
That's the amazing thing, right? Not only did he make that kick, but they tried to ice him. He made that kick twice. He had to make that kick twice. So then, of course, you've got some NFL interest right now, and because that's a developmental league, that's got to be really gratifying. Mike, you mentioned Mike Nolan, my guest. You mentioned The Rock a couple of times. I'm curious, is he... Obviously, he is an investor and an owner in the league. How prevalent is he? How prominent is he? Is he around quite a bit? Is he involved? What's it been like to see him as be a part of this and work with him?
You know, he's one. I've seen Danny Garcia, but I haven't seen him in person here. Now, naturally, I've watched him over the years and stuff, but he gives the league a lot of credibility. The players really respect him. I think when he speaks about the league and what the intentions are of the league, and the opportunities that it presents, I think it just gets everybody excited who's in the league. And I think it also excites people on the outside for what they're trying to accomplish. And a guy like Jake is the perfect example of what The Rock continues to talk about. And that's an opportunity to, hopefully get you in the NFL. And, if it wasn't for this league, Jake would not have that opportunity. And hopefully that's what happens. Obviously we have a season ahead of us and he has to continue to kick well. But still, with the Rock, I like the message that he sends all the time, and he's consistent with his message, and he it's fun to watch him. I really enjoy him. I think he's got the right intentions for our guys.
Oh, he's self-made now. He is self-made. I mean, he started with nothing, and the guys can all relate to his career, his grind, what he's accomplished. So, Mike, finally, you and I are both old enough to remember the old USFL days, and they had some success as a spring league in the 80s, but since then, there have been a handful of attempts at spring ball that have failed. Why do you think maybe the UFL is in a better position to survive and thrive in the long term than those that came before it?
Well, I think when it first started, I think they were actually, their goal was to compete with the NFL. That was a big mistake. And I'm talking about one of the very early years that you mentioned. I think that was their mistake. They were trying to compete with the NFL. I think the NFL was too powerful for them, and that's why they lost out. And as the years have gone along, there's been other leagues that have been started up, and maybe they didn't try to compete with the NFL. They just tried to be the spring league, but I'm not so sure they didn't kind of price themselves out at times. And I believe that's what's, although right now we're kind of crawling before we do anything, there's a lot of cutting costs in what they do currently, but we still put a very good product on the field from a football standpoint. So the money currently, I think, is being spent in the right way. It's being spent on the players, the coaches, and the people that are working a little bit. But we're not over the top as far as meals and housing and just little things that can kind of make it more, because I think in time it's going to be a sole proprietor kind of a thing as far as the teams go. Right now they're just owned by obviously The Rock and Danny and Redbird and these other people. But I think in time it might spread out where there'll be some sole proprietors. And right now I think they're trying to make it as, not inviting is the wrong word, but you know what I mean. They're trying to present it as something that's a pretty good investment. So I think that's the thing. Right now they're just bringing it along and doing it in the right way so that we stay above board from a cost standpoint and still put a really good product out there. Look, it doesn't hurt us at all to have all these networks involved like we do. I mean, we've got Fox, NBC, we got ESPN, and they're all a part of it. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
It's huge.
I think the best thing in our league, perfectly honest with you, is the TV broadcast. I mean, these guys are, they're doing the NFL games in the fall. And they do a great job of covering our games, and it's all positive. I love that. There's not that, you know, putting somebody in their place kind of thing, or talking bad about somebody, or somebody's having a bad season and they rip them. I mean, ours is about building guys up and being positive all the time, and I love that about our league.
No, I get that. I absolutely understand that. There's plenty of the other going around, for sure. The Michigan Panthers are in the UFL. They're coming off a big win over the St. Louis Battlehawks. Their head coach is Mike Nolan. They're going to host Birmingham on Sunday. Mike, great to get caught up. Finally, we did it. Great to have you on the show. I appreciate that. Mike, that was fun.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it. Be on any time. So thanks a lot, Jim.
You got it, Mike. Take care. Good luck. Appreciate you. Mike Nolan, former head coach in the NFL. He coached the Niners from 05 through 08. Coach's son, of course, his father, was a two-time NFL head coach. And Mike Nolan knows ball. Clones, what do we want when we're craving protein or we need more energy? Not bars, not sugary snacks, not energy drinks. No, we want beef. Pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your father's jerky. Shriveled, dry, and tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and it's tasty. It's not tough. And why is it so good? Because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein, and it comes in four amazing flavors that satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes with you wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? By going back to how we ended hour two, let me reread this from Morgan in Santa Barbara. Jim, lifetime Bills fan and USC alumnus here. I'm so happy that ingrate and locker room cancer is gone. Bills management made the right decision. We were in cap hell, and tough choices had to be made. Diggs is a cancer. He has lost a step. He cost us the Chiefs game with his drop pass. Number one on my list of Bills players I detest. OJ stays in the Ring of Honor because he rushed for 2K in 14 games and got the greatest not guilty in American history. Morgan in Santa Barbara. We're USC, displaying the 32 in the Coliseum. Morgan. Dude, I hate that you're from Santa Barbara, if I'm being real with you, because I kind of hate that take. I'm not saying that Diggs is not difficult at times. Now, for you to say that he's a locker room cancer, you must spend a lot of time in that locker room to know that. I would not call that guy that, because I don't know. I know he can be difficult. I get that. And I know that he's probably not the easiest guy to be around at times. A lot of wide receivers aren't. At the same time, I'm not in that locker room, so I'm not going to call him a locker room cancer. And I know they're in cap hell. No doubt about that. But for you to sit here and act like he's the worst dude ever, but Orenthal's not that bad of a guy, and that the reason he's, quote, still in their Ring of Honor, I thought it was their wall, first of all. I thought it was a wall and not a ring. Whatever it is. For you to say, hey, Rome, come on. The reason he's still honored is because he did rush for 2,000 yards in 14 games. Oh, that trumps the double murder, allegedly? It does to Morgan. Yeah, I don't know. Diggs might not be the best guy ever, but he's still not as bad a guy as Oge. He never killed anybody. I think that's where the bar is. Anyway, Mafia, where do you come out on this? Are you going to tell me you're happy that he's gone, that you're better for him being gone? The locker room might be better, maybe, but are you going to argue that the team is better without this guy? And Houston obviously has no such concerns, because they made that deal. Every day when we're on the road, people around us endanger themselves and others by using their phones while driving. They think they're hiding it, but we've all seen them and know exactly who they are. For instance, there's the sneak-a-peeker who darts their eyes between the road and their texts. There's also the got a ticketer looking upset because they just got a ticket for using their phone while driving? And what about the fast scroller who can't drive 5 minutes without updating their social feeds? Or the nightlighter who has that mysterious glow illuminating the inside of their car after dark? Do any of these sound familiar? If they remind you of yourself or somebody you know, rethink your behavior before you find yourself becoming the fender benderer, the veering off the roader, or worst of all, the driver who killed someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA. Here's another interesting post on X. Jeff Goodman, at Goodman Hoops, posts, quote, crowdsourcing Arkansas fans on this. Do you want Eric Musselman as your coach next season? I haven't seen too many cases where a fan base appears to have flipped on a coach this quickly. After one bad year, guy did make the program nationally relevant again. Well said. One more thing. I've made the point that Arkansas had not gone to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament since 1996, before Muss showed up, and that Muss got them in the Elite Eight twice and the Sweet 16. Even that doesn't do him justice. En route to getting there, he beat a couple of number ones. En route to getting to the Elite Eight, he beat the number one seed Gonzaga when they had Chet Holmgren. It's a huge win. Even in losing in the Sweet 16, they lost to the eventual national champion, UConn Huskies. So, in fact, he did even better than it would appear. He had a rough year last year. I'll give you that. It did not go well. But you're going to run that guy off because of one rough year? Entitled much? Myopic much? Big Blue Nation is looking at you sideways. Big Blue Nation is rolling their eyes at you. Hog Nation. Meanwhile, I'm guessing Muss is somewhere here in SoCal. I mentioned that I reached out to him yesterday, and Muss and I are good friends. I'm, you know, obviously. But I'm not defending him because we're good friends. I'm defending him because he's a damn good coach. One of the best in the nation. I'm defending him because he did a hell of a job for you, Hog fan. And you turned on this guy because he had one bad year. So I've not reached out to him today. I'm giving him his space. You know, he made it clear that he was not going to really have a conversation with me about it. I know he's in it and going through it. So I'm imagining he's somewhere right now. I'm imagining he might even be on campus at USC right now. After all, they do have a major opening. They need a men's basketball coach. And there are lots of reports that Muss is not only here, but he's their top candidate. And if I'm USC, especially USC, which is going into the Big Ten, I'm not letting this guy off campus without getting his name on the line that is dotted. Because that dude is one of the best basketball coaches in the country. Because that dude is that dude. Because that dude is my dude, Muss. And he is a primary target in their search. There are some other names. Other jungle guys, by the way. Buzz Williams' name has come up. Mark Pope's name has come up. I like both those guys quite a bit. Pope's interesting. Buzz doesn't seem like as natural a fit, but I'm a big Buzz guy. Pope definitely seems interesting, but I'm taking Muss over all these guys, and I have respect for the other guys. And I'm not just saying that because he and I go way back. I'm saying it because he's a damn good coach. Full stop. I'm saying it because USC, you know, you might think to yourself, oh, that's USC. That is a great job. In fact, that's a pretty easy job in the sense that you've got all that talent in your backyard. You've got all that crazy money and resources. I'm here to tell you, it's not an easy job at all. It's not an easy job at all. And they're going into the Big Ten, which is going to make it even tougher. It's not nearly as easy as a lot of people seem to think it is. There's been some pretty damn good coaches come through here and not have success. Ask Tim Floyd if that's an easy job. Ask Kevin O'Neill if that's an easy job. Hell, Andy Enfield just left. Ask him how easy that job is. He left for SMU, and then the spin was, oh yeah, but if they were not in the ACC, I wouldn't be doing it. Yeah, I don't know, maybe. If USC were that great of a job and that great of a situation, he wouldn't have bounced. And no offense, USC. This is not an easy job, and it's about to get tougher because they're going to the Big Ten. But if anybody can succeed at this program in that situation and can handle the transition to the Big Ten, it's Emus. USC is not going to do any better. And I'd even argue Arkansas is not either. Razorback Nation, don't take this the wrong way, but you messed this up. If this guy's leaving because you ran him off, you messed this up. If this guy's leaving because he got you to the Elite Eight twice and the Sweet 16, and after one bad year, it got so toxic that he no longer wanted to be there, when I know he loved it there. I know for a fact. Now, maybe not right now. But can you blame him if he doesn't love it there right now? It got really toxic really quickly. But I know for a fact that he and his family loved it there. In the good times. And the good times weren't that long ago. The good times were what, 5 minutes ago? Have you already forgotten? Trust me, the guy did not have one down year and suddenly forget how to coach. He didn't have one down year and suddenly forget how to recruit. He didn't have one down year and then just lose interest. He didn't have one down year and then turn into the worst coach in the conference. But to hear some of you Hog fans, that's exactly what happened. You never wanted him. You never liked him, which is bullcrap. But now it's like, oh man, his in-game adjustments are garbage. No, your takes are garbage. Instead of cracking on this guy and running him off, you should be thanking him. Again, when was the last time you saw your beloved Razorbacks in the Sweet 16? Do you even remember? So what if this doesn't work out? What if Musk comes to L.A. and doesn't like it for some reason? Unlikely. He played his college ball at San Diego. Musk and I used to hang out on Pacific Beach in San Diego way back in the day. So he has Southern California roots. But what if it doesn't go the right way? What if he walks out of a meeting with the AD and says, hey, you know, we could still work this thing out. I got a feeling that Arkansas wouldn't take him back. I've got a feeling that Arkansas Hog fan would not take him back. You should. As far as you, USC, nothing is guaranteed. It is a tough job. Other good coaches have come up short there. Not only is that a tough job, that job is tougher now than it's ever been. But if anybody can do it, it's Mus. I'd bet on Mus. I would bet on Mus even after going through what he's gone through at Arkansas this year. In fact, I would bet on Mus because of what he's gone through at Arkansas this year. My dude's been through some tough things, overcome some adversity. The dude is a battler. He's a grinder. He's a fighter. He's got tremendous energy still. He and I are the same exact age. That is not a guy looking for an off-ramp. Trust me, you are going to get a really, really motivated coach. Even when they got bounced in the SEC tourney, he immediately came out of that with, man, I want it as badly now as I ever have. I want to fix this thing. I want to get it right. And all of a sudden, now he's in L.A. SC, give him what he wants. Give him what he wants because you're not going to get a better coach. And given how things apparently are going to end in Arkansas, you're not going to find a more motivated coach. And this dude's drive and ambition were already off the charts. And by the way, this is what he does. He fixes things. Ask Nevada. I'll give you another example. Arkansas. What the hell was Arkansas before he got there? Not relevant. Not in basketball. Not playing on the second weekend since 1996. In other words, not relevant since Nolan Richardson was there. The big nasty. Scottie Thurman, Corey Beck, Corliss Williamson, not relevant since those dudes. Clint McDaniel, yo. 40 minutes of hell, yo. That long. 1-800-636-8686. I want to hear from you Hog fans. How did it get that ugly, that toxic? How do you hate this guy that much that quickly? Now, I know it's not all of you, but come on. Let's go to the phones. Arkansas. There you go. In market, on topic. I'm really curious. How did it get this toxic this fast with this guy? Bo in Arkansas. Bo, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Jim?
Good, good.
Hey, I am a huge Mus fan, and there's just a lot of idiots here in the state of Arkansas and that are Hog fans. I mean, I don't care if Mus has two or three bad seasons. I believe he is our coach, and I hope he stays here, but I mean, he's a very popular guy. And
hey, Bo, let me ask you something. Is he, Bo, look, is he a very popular guy? Because from where I'm sitting and what I'm hearing, it doesn't seem like he's a very popular guy there anymore.
Well, I just feel like there's a lot of stupid fans that if they don't get, you know, I think they got spoiled. I think they got spoiled with what he's already given us. We went to back-to-back, you know, Elite Eight, Sweet 16, and I love them. I know a lot of people that do love them. I know there's a lot of stupid typing warriors out there that like to talk crap, and I don't want to see them leave.
Hey, Bo, look, I think you nailed it, Bo. Let me jump in. Here's where it is. I think you nailed it when you said there are a lot of entitled fans here. Entitled fans. Spoiled fans. Entitled fans. Fans with short memories. I'm going to say to you, those who know. Those in the know have got to be sick that this guy is going to get away. Because I'm here to tell you, and I think those same fans that are entitled are going to say, he wants more money. He's looking to leave. This much I know about Mus. He and his family loved it there. Loved it there. And he turned that thing around, and he turned it around quickly. He understands the portal. He's a damn good coach. He can recruit. He embraced that community. Yeah, Rome, well, we embraced him. Yes, you did. And why the hell wouldn't you embrace him? You were totally irrelevant as a program until he showed up, and he had you in the Elite Eight. And the Elite Eight, and the Sweet 16, and the national conversation. Of course you embraced him, until you didn't, until he had one bad year. So if this guy had three bad years, four bad years, was getting his head handed to him, getting his ass kicked, not putting in the time, taking shortcuts, that'd be different. That's not Mus. He's not like that. He's not wired like that. I'm telling you, this dude grinds. He works hard. He cares. He's not one of those guys saying, man, you know what? It's just a game. You have to understand this dude and who his dad was and how he came up and how he approached it and the opportunities that he had. And never forget this about Mus. He was the head coach of Golden State. He was the head coach of Sacramento. He got fired. He had a DUI. He took time off. He had to start at the very bottom. He had to be an assistant coach in the college ranks at the bottom and work his way all the way back until he finally got an opportunity to be a head coach at Nevada. Crushed it there. How do you think he parlayed that into a job at Arkansas? Crushed it there. I don't know. I deeply believe in this guy as a head coach and as somebody who cares and grinds and is a winner. He had a player go sixth overall. Highest for an Arkansas player since 1985. Arkansas fan, what are you so angry about with this guy? Yeah, he had a bad year. He'd be the first one to tell you. And believe me, nobody's more upset about it than he is. Nobody's more determined to fix it than he is. The guy is still a recruiting maniac. It's still incredible. So what are you going to tell me? Well, yeah, he can recruit, but he can't coach. The hell he can't. And that video that the AD dropped with him on the bus and them editing it down and the AD looking up and going, oh, you still here? When Muss knew nothing about the video, it was just weird. Weird. The whole thing is weird. That speaks to a disconnect because I know you Hog fans will say, no, that's just the AD saying, I'm just addressing the speculation. He's not going anywhere. And that's not how that sounded. Like, you still here? You still here? Like, oh, whoa, go. You're still here. Put it this way. I have discussed that with Muss, but if I were Muss and I didn't know, because it's not a coordinated effort, the social media team did not run that through him, apparently. If I were Muss and I looked at my phone or somebody sent me that and I saw that and I didn't get a heads up from the AD or the social media department, I'd be like, dang, really? There is a disconnect here. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced? A brake light fix or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts are extremely knowledgeable, helpful, and best of all, they are friendly. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto, do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. Once again, O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. Be fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Hey, Jim. Do you ever go by your childhood home? If so, does it look the same? Scott in Milton, Florida. Really interesting question. And no, I don't, but I have. And of course, it does not look the same. You know, like any house. Homes in decent neighborhoods always get remodeled and then flipped and resold and appreciate. So I've done that. It's always kind of weird. But you know what's really weird to me? We've had a couple of really nice homes where they painted them, but not just painted them, but painted the exterior when they were super unique in character. Like, as an example, when I lived in the 818 last, I lived in a gated community in Tarzana, and we lived in this home, this colonial home with beautiful red brick and two big balconies. I mean, it really was kind of striking. It was like, they have a name for them. They're McMansions. They're not custom. They're not mansions. They're McMansions. You know, like wannabe mansions, like fast food mansions. But it was a beautiful house in a beautiful neighborhood. And we sold that house to move to Orange County, where we are now and have been since the mid-2000s. These people painted the red brick white. Really weird. I mean, their house. Janet took it personally. I'm like, hey, man, their house. I mean, they came all cash offer like in 1 week. Whatever. It's their house. We don't own the house. I don't care what you do to the house once I no longer own the house. But weird. The beautiful, striking red brick that they painted white. I thought that was odd. And then we built the house here. Same thing. It wasn't brick, but it was a Tuscan home that was kind of an orange, like... It was a color that was very much in character with the theme of the home. And that was a custom home. And it was a beautiful home. And it was built by a really renowned builder in the area. Same thing. Whited the whole thing out. I'm like, dang. But I made the same point to Jano. They bought the house. It's their house. They can do whatever the hell they want with their house. So to answer your question, Scott, yes, I've gone back to homes we used to own, and no, they never look the same. Hi, Jim. What do you do with all the Apple stickers that you inevitably have? Bell be in Calgary. Hey, Bell, that's a great question. You know, like the Apple stickers, people, because I've got hundreds, theoretically. And the Apple stickers are a real thing to the Apple sphere. Like, people love them. Bell, I hate to say this. I've thrown every one of them away. I don't even keep them. And I love the product, and I paid so much money for the product, and I have so much of the product. I don't put the stickers on anything. Like, when you watch this show, when you saw it, when we were on TV, you see my laptop. There's no sticker on it. I've never, ever once put an Apple sticker on anything. I barely look at them even. And I'm not really sure why that is. Like, I love the product. And there's nothing... Part of the reason I buy so much is not because I can, but because the opening of the box, man, it's the ultimate dopamine. I'm not proud of it. It's like a drug. That for some reason, the sticker, and I'm all about the process, man. I love the unboxing. I love the unboxing. For some reason, the sticker is not a part of the unboxing to me. It's not a part of the process. I don't put them on my car. I never put any stickers on my cars. So I'm not putting that sticker on my car, and I'm not putting it on my laptop. So what am I going to do with the stickers? Put them where? The garbage can. I know, it's weird, right? Hey, Jim, it looks like one day is left to bid on the XR4 Ti at carsandbids.com. Currently at 6,000. You're going to become a two-time XR4 Ti owner, Pete in Youngstown. Am I going to get in there before the hammer drops? I've thought about it. I really have. But I have such bad memories. As time goes on, you know, all things that used to be bad turn out to be pretty good. Like, you don't remember things as badly. At least me personally, the scars that I used to have kind of go away. And time does heal most wounds. And in some ways, I kind of look at that car romantically, even though it led to some of the worst memories of my life. But there's still something deep within about that car that terrifies me. I can't do it. I want to for nostalgia, but I know that when I go into it to drive it, it won't start or it'll explode. I can't do it. I can't do it. Somebody in the comments asked, did Jim Rome own this beast? I did not. Mine was blue. That one's red. Mine was leather. That one's like canvas. No. No, that actually, it's not red. It's Rosso, right? Rosso Red. The guy who runs the site, I'll be honest with you, I don't know that site, or I didn't until Tommy, hit me up real quick. Carsandbids.com. The guy did a review, and I'm like, is that the guy who owns the car? And you said, no. Who is that dude who did the review?
Doug DeMuro, his name is. It's his site. He started carsandbids.com. He also has a YouTube channel. I believe it's just called his name, Doug DeMuro, where he reviews all kinds of exotic cars going back like 50
years. Like the Mercure.
It's really, really cool, and he's phenomenal at it. And I was already a fan of his before he started this site. Then he started this weird auction site that was like eBay for cars, which already exists. So I was like, this is not that good of an idea, but it's catered to enthusiasts, and he is one himself, and it works. This site is really cool.
And dude, like I said, people who know that car, but you'd have to own that car to know that car. I can't believe that guy knows that car as intimately as he does. Like, if I had written a description, I could have in no way have nailed it the way he nailed it. He nailed that. I'm like, he must own that car, but he doesn't.
His trademark is that he knows, like, the quirks and features, as he calls them, the quirks and features of every car. That's, like, his specialty. So he's all about, he's all about the XR4 Ti then.
Because it's the quirkiest car ever.
Exactly.
And it's got features, and it's a quirk. He nailed it. All right, appreciate that, Tommy. Tommy dialed me into him. This guy said something to the effect of, that was Ford's bid or attempt to compete with BMW, and obviously it didn't work because they stopped manufacturing that car in 2 years. I'm like, damn, that guy knows. Here it is. This is this guy's description. And again, I get nothing out of this, but you all know about the XR4 Ti. He wrote, quote, "This is so," in caps, "this is so cool." MiraCorps was Ford's short-lived attempt at taking on BMW head-to-head. And as you can probably guess, it really didn't work out. Not many of these XR4 Ti models were sold here, and they're underrated as they boast a punchy, turbocharged engine and rear-wheel drive. This XR4 Ti is pretty much unmodified, which is a nice benefit, and it boasts an accident-free Carfax report for peace of mind. It also touts the 5-speed manual transmission that improves the driving experience and a long-term owner who has had the car for more than 20 years. If you want a quirky enthusiast car that is sure to turn heads at the next Cars and Coffee meet, and that's a blast to drive, you've just found it. To top it off, this XR4 Ti, the first one we've listed on Cars and Bids, is offered with the thrill of no reserve. Dude, that is an incredible review. He nailed it. That's exactly what that car is about when it runs. And by the way, anonymous owner of that rig, you're bleeping welcome. Would that car have gotten a bid of more than $500 if not for me? And what's it up to now? $5,000? Six. 19 bids, $6,000 in 1986. When we bought ours, we paid $18,005-something. $18,000. $18,000. Big swing, yo. Big swing. My old man said, for college graduation, you can have a car. And the budget for the car is $20,000. That's what my dad told me. He goes, now, go research it. Research it. You come back to me after you've done the work, and you tell me what car you want. Research it. I'm like, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I didn't research it for 1 second. I wanted a BMW. I knew it. That's all I ever wanted my whole life was a BMW. So I go away for like 3 months pretending like I researched it when I didn't even open up one Consumer Report.